Hey, good afternoon, morning, or wherever you're at. Another edition of the podcast of the Mobile Forensic Examiner. Today we're going to talk with Tyler Clark from Reno Police Department. So I'll give a little bit of an intro, allow him to introduce himself. Tyler, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I work at the Reno Police Department in Reno, Nevada. I've been a police officer for 24 years. I've been a detective in financial crimes for about 8 years now. And currently, for the past 7 years, I've been assigned to our computer crime unit, or our electronic crimes task force, in conjunction with the Secret Service.
Excellent. And so, are you just doing phones now? Did you start out in computers? Are you doing both computers and phones?
I started out in computers and then was sent to a class for mobile device forensics and started in the phones because that was the next up-and-coming thing. We had a computer crimes unit for a while, and several people promoted out of it. So I kind of got tasked with being the sole guy in charge of it and had to grow it from there. So we've made the progression from doing computer forensics, basic triage stuff, to more advanced things now, and then moved into the mobile device data collection and examination side of it.
Great. And so I mean, how many sworn officers at Reno?
We have roughly 200 to 220 sworn on our department.
And in your unit, how many people say in the digital crime, so computer investigators and the mobile investigators?
Well, there's only two of us. We share as much workload as we possibly can. Like I said, we're just growing our unit again, trying to get off the trainings and things like that for the new guy. I'm the most experienced here. I've been here the longest, and now our next examiner that's coming up has been doing it now for about 2 years, and he's catching on pretty quick and doing a pretty good job. We have a county sheriff's office, the Washoe County Sheriff's Office, that handles a lot of the ICAC, and they're partnered with the FBI, of course, and they do a lot of the internet crimes against children and the online predator stuff. But they're quite backlogged when it comes to doing the computer forensics. So because I'm attached to the Secret Service and I'm part of the Electronics Crime Task Force there, the majority of the state's computer forensics for financial crimes, robbery, homicide, burglary, et cetera, fall on me and my partner here. And we both, for a while, have been doing it part-time. He's still a member of the Family Crimes Unit, so he does it part-time, and I do it basically now full-time. So there's two of us that are doing computers and phones, and we've now seen, of course, the majority of the stuff that we're doing now is phones. We do it for our narcotics unit, our interdiction team, our gang units, parole and probation. It doesn't seem like there isn't any investigative division within our state that doesn't bring phones to us for some reason or another, even all the way to gaming control. We have, because of our gambling in Nevada, we have our gaming control investigators, and they even bring us computers and phones. So
right, yeah, and that's exactly, I mean, I think that's the, at least what I saw in law enforcement as well, and as I talk to everyone in law enforcement, that's exactly kind of the progression, right, is that I would say, well, let's just say, what's the percentage of the crimes that you get from robbery, homicide, from burglaries, from any either property or person's crime that has some piece of electronic evidence in it?
80 to 90%.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, right?
Easily.
Yeah. And of those, of that 80 to 90% in those cases, what's a percentage would you say the crime is, I don't want to say solved, but solved, right, with mm-hmm. a piece of electronic evidence, whether it be from a computer or, a mobile device?
I seem to find probably about 75% of that 80 to 90% has some type of evidence related to the crime that has been perpetrated. Either they need a phone log to clear somebody's name, or they need a phone log to incriminate somebody. They need some type of text. They need some type of evidence off that phone to either put the person in the area of the crime or out of the area of the crime or talking about the crime. I've seen now, especially with financial crimes, I see a lot of images, pictures, a lot of that going on with people taking pictures for identity theft purposes, using them on IDs and things like that. So they'll use the cameras on the devices and store those pictures and transfer them either into Adobe or some other program that they can create a phony identification card or something like that. That's a lot of what I'm seeing.
Yeah. You know what? And that's pretty much global. Especially in kind of the law enforcement end of it. Obviously, it's moving into enterprise and corporate level as well, because everyone really has a mobile device, computer, something digital. I mean, that's kind of how we're running now. So would you think, or would you say, and I mean, this is kind of a rhetorical question, but I mean, would you say that mobile devices are, say, mobile phones, smartphones, tablets, whatever, are, I guess, an integral part to any type of investigation?
Oh yeah, definitely, and that's not me being biased, because that's what my job is, doing the mobile forensic side of it. It's a fact. They're an integral part of almost every single investigation that we have. In fact, the recent Supreme Court decision coming out saying that searching a mobile device isn't incident to arrest anymore, that had a pretty big impact on my workload and the workload of examiners across the nation, I'm sure. Because for a time it was just push button forensics. Everybody had a tool that they could use, and everybody was going into phones because they realized how much data was collected in there. Well, they got a little greedy, I think, and pushed it a little bit too far. And then the Supreme Court, of course, made their ruling that search incident to arrest doesn't apply anymore. And if you have enough information and you need to get into that phone, then you need to get a search warrant. So now with them having to get search warrants again, and going to the phones the right way, for lack of better terms, more complete and thorough, then our jobs have become so much more intensive. There's so many more phones now coming to us. Before, our narcotics unit, they had a Cellebrite, and they would just dump phones when they'd arrest somebody. Now they're pretty much forced to come to us, because not only do they need to have the paper to do it, and we're helping them write search warrants and do that stuff, but they also don't have the ability to dig as deep as we do as examiners. They're doing the what you see, what you get kind of thing. And we need to dig a little bit deeper. We need to parse out the information and drill down through the file systems to find the specific apps or their databases where they're hiding and pull those out. Because as you well know, from me taking many of your classes, actually, the stuff that the tools are getting can't keep up with what's out there as far as apps go, third-party apps and things like that. So we have to actually do a little bit more work, and there's a little bit more work to it.
Yeah, you know, and I've definitely found that. You know, I've been interacting a lot with the local narcotics unit here. Just get them up and running. With some software, talked to him a little bit about it. And what's interesting is, when I left the PD, that, you know, it was the same thing. You know, it was just dump the data, grab the information. There's a lot of, our gang guys, the narcotics, just to kind of get, again, just the SMS, the contacts. But what's interesting now is I'm talking to the narcotics. They're like, hey, you know what? I need to look at his, WhatsApp. I need to look at inside these applications. I need to get into his Gmail that's on there. And so it's very, very interesting, because, you know that that's a much more intensive, and it takes more training, right? If I'm going to get a physical extraction of that particular Android, or an iOS device that's I'm diving into the database files, it's much different than simply just selecting the button. And so I think, which is interesting, is because your take on the Supreme Court issue is that it's going to generate more work, say, for the forensic labs, right, for the people who have the training, because it kind of takes it away from those first responders. Is that what I'm kind of understanding? Because that's a different view, really, than I've heard before, and it makes complete sense.
Well, I believe it's going to create a little bit more work for us, because a lot of the stuff that the street guys were getting, and by no means were they not getting enough, but they were getting the low-hanging fruit. They're getting all the easy stuff that they could get. And typically what I would see over the period of the last couple of years is they would get their low-hanging fruit, and then they would come to me and say, I'm missing a whole bunch of texts. I know that this guy was texting my CI, and they're not on here. Where are they? Well, in order to find those, sometimes you got to dig deeper, and you got to go into that third-party app that they were using. Maybe they were texting using their Wi-Fi or something like that. So now I have to go in and do that a little bit more work. So they would start out the process still, and they would be able to jump on it and get going. But now they're starting to see that they're with the third-party apps and a lot of the things that are going on with phones and tablets now, they have to ask for more help. They have to get more training. And those guys can't necessarily be jacks of all trades. If you're going to do this, if you're going to do mobile phone forensics and you're going to do computer forensics, you pretty much got to do that. It's not a side job that you can have, because technology changes so fast. I mean, I'm constantly weekly trying to keep my tools up to date. And that's just keeping updates going.
Yeah,
that's not the training side of it.
Yep, 100%, 100% agree with that. It is just it's progressing again. You know, when we first started a lot of the training, it was really, you know, those first responders grab the data, dump the data, grab it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you'd have computer forensic examiners that would come in and they're like, oh my gosh, really, this isn't forensics, this isn't. And it's now really shifted. I mean, it's really, really shifted because now, you know, with the devices that we're seeing, these high capacity devices, they're running an operating system, they have files, folders, everything that you would believe to be on, you know, a standard computing platform. And now you really have to have an examiner who's kind of looking through those the weeds, because, you know, I say you're going to miss 90% of the really relevant data by just going and scraping the surface for SMS, MMS, contacts, call logs, that type of information.
Well, I agree. I talk to my kids constantly, and they're a wealth of information for me as to what everybody's using right now.
Oh,
I mean, what is the most popular app? What is the most popular messaging app? What is the most popular picture share app? And then now, with the tools, and the tools are getting better every day. I mean, they allow better access. They have better carving ability. But it still takes that, you know, I almost want to say that forensic examiner side of it, the guys from the computer world who had to manually carve and had to go in and find things in the hex. Now we have to do that on the phone side of it. We have to go in there and manually carve things. And in order to find some of these third party apps or programs that the people are using, you have to carve, and you have to know how to do it. And now if you don't know how to carve, or you don't know the principles of it or how it works, then when you get on the stand, it's very difficult for you to testify to where exactly this came from. That's the whole other side of it, is the testimony side of it. We're being challenged constantly now. We're being asked, you know, down to, if they can't find a flaw in how you did the job, then they have to find a flaw in what you know about what you did to do the job. And if they could put that little speck of reasonable doubt in a jury's mind when you're the expert, basically, because that's a lot of us in the forensic world have been made experts in court testimony and have testified as expert witnesses. If they can put one little chink in your armor there by asking you a question that, you know, what's this mean? And you go, I don't know. Yeah, well, then she say, I don't know, then they're going to attack that and say, well, you're the expert. You should know what this means or what this is. And so that's what I'm seeing a lot more challenges as well with the defense getting on board and being a little bit more proactive and bringing out their own experts and trying to attack what we're doing, at least in my local area. You know, over the past few years, we've been using a lot more computer evidence and cell phone evidence in our courts. And for a long time, our defense attorneys stood there staring blankly at us like, what are you talking about? And so they've gone out and started to educate themselves, and now they're starting to bring on experts to try and challenge the things that we're saying here locally. So it's been good for us because it keeps us fresh and it keeps us sharp, because we have to be.
I agree. And I think that's very important for really both sides to be up on the technology and understand, because it keeps everything, like you said, fresh. You know, it keeps you up on top of your game. And then again, you know, it allows for, I guess, the truth to be known, right? That you're going in there. This is what happened. This is why it happened. And it makes you a true expert, right? Instead of an expert by default, because no one's really challenging that. So again, yeah, that's very good. So what type of data, I guess, data type is most important to you, I guess, or let's just say, what's most important in the majority of investigations that you do? Is it pictures? Is it a text message? Is it a certain application? Is it what is it? Say from, we'll just talk from mobile devices.
I think it's changing back and forth with phones, especially. They really like the geolocation. Our investigators, the people that come to us, they want to know where this phone was and when they took this picture, where was this picture taken at, that type of thing. There's a lot of the geolocation stuff that they're looking for. That's important. They want to try and place people in certain areas. They want to try and know if the phone was on or off or being used at a certain location. Text, because that's become probably the number two way of talking to people. If you're not face-to-face with somebody, you're texting them. They're not really calling people a lot anymore. They're sending texts back and forth. So text messages have to be right up there as well. Some of the smaller things that I've educated our department on and let them know about was the research apps. I mean, looking things up on the internet or searching for your airline tickets, things like that. Those have become important as well. You know, planning it for robbery homicide cases, planning the case, planning out how they're going to do the crime, how they're going to get to and from the crime, things like that show up in the databases still within the phone, and you can tie people to places and either disprove their story that they're telling you or prove their story that they're telling you.
Perfect. And in doing that, do you use multiple tools for mobile phones?
Yeah, I do. I started that years ago, and that started back in my days of starting out with computer forensics, using multiple tools, Sandcase and MPK and whatever else was available out there. When I started into the mobile phone side of it, the cellular phone side of it, I knew that it was up and coming and it would be a place that I wanted to go. So I started attending classes, and we started out with BitPim and some of the free tools that were out there, using those, and then progressed, of course, into a full array of tools. I've got MPE Plus, I've got Cellbrite, I've got Black Bag I use, I've got Sistine, and Lantern. I use all of those tools. And basically, I may not use every single one of them on every single case, but at a minimum, if I can, I use at least two. Just for the validation purposes, because you know, any tool that's out there misses certain things. I mean, no tool's perfect. One is gonna afford you, depending on the version, afford you better carving or better parsing than the other one. And you may end up with the messages you wanted or that you needed to get, and the other tool may not get those messages. So I do it a lot for validation, but then internal validation as well, drilling down through the root, trying to find where the tool got the picture from, so I could say yes. I can say without a doubt that this is where the picture came from because the tool gave it to me, and I looked down here in the database and I found it myself as well.
Great.
So,
yeah, and that's, I think it's again very, very important. I can't stress that enough. That it's not necessarily, you know, I mean, validation is of one tool that okay, it got this, and the other tool got it as well. But I see it really as. And I agree with you. I mean, there's the tools cannot be perfect, right? Tools are developed by man. And, you know, as applications change, as things shift, you know, obviously things can be missed. It's not that it's not there, right? It's just that either, you know, the carver was built up for the previous version of the app. And so obviously utilizing multiple tools can help you, say, uncover that additional information. And I'm a big advocate of obviously doing that. So I'm going to ask you a question just specific about MPE Plus because obviously that's my favorite for obvious reasons.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But is there a case that you can remember that you utilized it on? And you don't have to be specific because if it's a live case, I completely understand that you used MPE Plus on that made a difference for that case.
Yeah, specifically one that was it was going on right now. The jury just returned a guilty verdict in the case.
And
a lot of it, yes, thank you. And a lot of it was based on the two of us, myself and my other examiner in the office, doing cell phone examinations. There was an aggravated stalking case, and there was a couple of different phones, the victim's phone and the suspect's phone. Suspect's phone, and I had, in fact, called you about this because it had stumped me. The suspect's phone was an Apple, an iPhone, and the iTunes backup was encrypted. And this was a while back. This was when actually MPE came out first with the ability to go past that iTunes backup encryption and pull at least some of the information out. It was the only tool at the time that could do that. And I know everybody else was chasing the tail trying to catch up and do that. And eventually I think they do, and they did. But that tool, that phone was critical in this case. It was a suspect's phone. I needed to have the pictures and the text messages that were on it. And I plugged it in into MPE and worked through the case using MPE, and it went around the iTunes backup encryption and pulled what I needed, and I was able to show it. And in fact, they brought their expert up, and their expert only used one tool, and it was an MPE, and he couldn't get anything. So it was good. It was an excellent case for me and for our department to show the need to have these different tools. And it's, again, another one of the cases, and I used many of the cases to justify to my department in these budget times, hey, you know, we need to maintain these licenses. We need to maintain these tools because, look at this case, for example, I would never have gotten those pictures, or it would have taken me a lot longer waiting for, you know, new releases to come out of other tools before I could have got those text messages and those pictures. They were such an integral part of that case. And so
perfect. That's
a good one.
Yeah, excellent. Any others that you can think of offhand, or is that
That's one of the shiniest ones. That's one of the ones where MPE was the only tool that I was able to use, and it was the one that worked, and I didn't need to go any deeper because I was able to match the text messages that were on that phone and the pictures that were on that phone based on the number and the times and all that to the exact same ones that were on the victim's phone.
Oh,
and we were to be able to just flip back and forth. Here you go, page
Very
to page.
Good. Very good. Now, what features, and I'm going to talk about MPE Plus again, what features do you use the most in MPE Plus?
Wow, that's kind of a hard one. I like the Android parsing. I'll use that as well. And I've tried it on several occasions to pull in exams that I've gathered in other tools and just parse certain folders. And just was able to go in and allow it to parse through those folders. That's one of the ones that I've used. Other than that, it's hard to say. I mean, I like the whole tool itself. So,
have you had the chance to, my favorite, and I'm just going to talk about my favorite, is the SQL Builder. Have you had that
mm-hmm.
chance to use that? Because, you know, what I tell people, because applications change so often, right?
That
the tables change, the different data formats, apps change so often. You know, it's hard to have, say, an automatic parser for an application. So using SQL Builder, that's what I kind of like, is being able to, say, build those queries, save those queries, share those queries, and be able
mm-hmm.
to run out and pull that additional information. Have you had a chance to use the SQL Builder at all?
I know it's there after having talked to you on a couple of occasions, and I have not had the chance to use it yet. I'm looking forward to using it. I hope that I'll have a case that I can use it on. I'm sure I will, but I haven't had a chance yet.
Excellent.
To do that.
Excellent. Yeah, and that's what, you know, it's great. There's all these little nuggets that are in there, trying to obviously focus in on a forensic examination, making sure that to give a lot of the power to the examiner. That's in there, so they don't have to wait for, say, an update. You know, put out by the developer saying, oh, okay, yeah, we support this particular application. It really kind of puts the power into your hands to pull that type of stuff.
Yeah, having that ability, I think, is huge. That way, you can just put the stuff together. You can create how you want that viewer to show and get together with your own prosecutors and see what they want, because a lot of them, every one of them is different. Every one of them wants it in a different order. They want it laid out in a different pattern. And I think with having that builder built into a tool, I think that's huge. I think that'll work very well for me. It'll work very well for everybody that has access to using MPE Plus.
Yeah, I agree with that. Now, speaking of smartphones, and I won't keep you too much longer. Speaking of smartphones, or devices in general that you examine, what's the percentage of the devices, or say, what percentage are Android and iOS that come into that you are asked to examine?
Well, you know, I'm seeing a lot more Android-based ones, I think. I would probably have to say 60-40, and it would be 60% Android and 40% the iPhones for me. That's about what I'm seeing.
And of those, and so how about all examinations? What's the percentage are smart devices that are coming to you?
Oh, my God, 90%?
Yeah, you know, and
I don't see those old flip phones anymore, and all
exactly.
That stuff.
Exactly, and that's so of everyone that I talk to, I always ask that question. I always ask that question, not just obviously on the podcast, but anytime I run into someone who does exams, I say, "Give me the percentage of smart devices," and they're like, every one of them. I've never had anyone say less than 89%. I don't know how 89% came up, but it's always at least 89% and above. I mean, some say 100%. 100% are smart devices. I haven't. They're like, you know what? I haven't seen a Nokia. I haven't seen a Razer. I haven't seen LG flip phone. These legacy phones for years.
Mm-hmm. No, the last time I've seen them is in training classes.
that's
where I've seen them. The majority of them are the smartphones. Everybody, I think it's because across the board, the devices have become so much more powerful. And the prices have come down so far. I mean, nobody's going to carry around a laptop anymore if they can carry around a little iPad mini, or they can carry around one of these Galaxy tablets or a Galaxy tablet phone, whatever, because they have the same computing capabilities almost as a laptop computer. So why would somebody have a laptop in their house when you can create documents, send documents, print documents, do all that stuff off of your device, off of your phone with the fraud side of it, for me, I see entire financial forgery laboratories, which we have a law in Nevada that is a felony to possess a financial forgery laboratory. And a financial forgery laboratory is any computer or mechanical devices configured in a manner in which you can use to commit identity theft or counterfeiting or anything along those lines. Now, an iPhone by itself is a financial forgery laboratory. An Android phone by itself is a financial forgery laboratory, because they have everything they need in that 64 gig iPhone or that Android smartphone. They can just walk around from motel to motel printing checks or making IDs or whatever. They need some of the peripheral stuff, of course, like a laminator and things like that, or a printer. But if you can stick an entire financial forgery laboratory in your pocket and walk around with it, you're just out making money.
Amazing. So, yeah, amazing. And now, you know, nowadays you can go into any of the stores, right? The Walmarts, Kroger's, any of the stores, and buy, a track phone, right? Net 10. Mm-hmm. And they're no longer the flip phones, right? They're Android. Every one of them are Android-based, and you walk out of the store for, $25 to $45, and you're ready to go.
With a smartphone. With a phone that you can connect to the internet, you can text, you can have the third-party apps, the burner phones that we used to always call them burner phones with the drug guys. You know, they're not flip phones anymore. They're an actual smartphone. And that's where I know my suspect was texting the CI, and he was telling him all this stuff, and we looked in the phone and we can't find it. Well, it's probably because it's either hidden in there or it's in a third-party app. And let me ask you something. Let me throw something out to you. Have you seen, I know that, a report came out of a college down in Atlanta, I want to say, talking about hiding information or masking information in Android phones, a hack that was there to hide information. Like, if you and I were talking about a crime, but you were in my contacts and your number was basically masked completely as like my mother's number, and you were under my mom's name and things like that, and I was able to hide all that. Have you heard much about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, actually, I was reading a document the day before yesterday. So those are, again, that comes down to the whole thing that I've always really wanted and I preach to people is that, you know, you can hide things in almost plain sight, right? Or I can go in and hook this device up and, you know, access the file system, put a TrueCrypt container. Right, mm-hmm. I can put a container into that, and the only person that really knows that exists, I hand this off to someone else in, you know, another country, another state. Hey, here, I just bought a phone for you. Oh, fantastic. Oh, great. Oh, you know, law enforcement, they look through it, you know, push the button, out comes the data. Oh, no, really nothing there. But then they just hook it up to their computer. Now they have a TrueCrypt container with all of this crazy stuff that's just been transported to them. Right?
Exactly.
And so new applications are doing that too. Of you know, might be running in the background. It's an application that this hacker develops, and that they can now push it onto the device. It's not something from the Play Store, through Android. Now they're running this app that now is just a direct a connect between these two people. You know, mm-hmm. And you can do that. So again, having access and doing a full complete exam should be mandatory for just those types of instances.
Well, and with the locking of devices and bypassing the locks on both Android and iOS devices, some of the stuff that we've been pushing out to our patrol guys and to our detectives as well is if you're there on a search warrant and you're getting equipment or evidence, to make sure even if they don't say that they ever back their phone up to their computer or connect it or sync it or anything to their computer to get their computer, and then going in and starting to look in there for the backups and looking through the backups that they have on their computers and plugging them into these tools, taking a iTunes backup and throwing it into the tool and seeing what was on the phone before.
Oh yeah,
and what they had. That kind of stuff has been huge, too. That's been huge for our patrol and for our detectives. I've been telling them constantly, and actually we've had a couple of cases now where the suspects were up and down that they never attached their phone. But, you know, in this day and age, with the ability to just walk into your house and wirelessly sync it to your computer, the chances are, you know, 90% of the people are syncing them and they don't even know it.
Right. Oh, exactly. Exactly right. Yeah, the evidence is still there, and I think that's the biggest thing is educate everyone and the first responders to look for just that information. You know, it's kind of outlying information that a lot of people don't even know that it's just that they sync those devices. And yeah, that's fantastic information. No, very, very good. Oh my gosh, fantastic interview. I appreciate your time. This is very, very good. And like I said, we can go on for hours, but, you know,
definitely.
People listening to it. So I appreciate that. I know that I'll see you, I'm sure, soon at some sort of conference. And I want to thank you for, one, everything that you do. And especially, I'm sure that people are proud of you in Reno. And keep up the good work. Keep on preaching the mobile forensics to everyone, because it's not going anywhere. So,
yep, definitely. I appreciate it, and thank you for all your help. I know that I've sent you emails on several occasions, and sometimes they may not even correspond with the right time, so you may be asleep when you get it because I'm sending it to you. But I appreciate your responses and all the help that you've provided to us on a regular basis.
It's my pleasure. That is all the time we have today in the Mobile Forensic Examiner podcast. I want to thank Tyler Clark again from the Reno Police Department for spending his time with us and telling us about the mobile forensics problems and some of the solutions that he has at the Reno Police Department. Join us next time when we bring on another expert to talk about mobile forensics and MP+. This podcast presented by Access Data. Music by Kevin MacLeod.